Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
I'm Kathy Aziz-Narain, and I'm the Chief Digital Officer here at Hoag. Hoag is a health institution here in Southern California.
Kathy, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. I'm excited about today's conversation and everything that we have planned out. Before we jump in and talk about all the great things you're currently doing and building, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just mentioned, currently Chief Digital Officer here at Hoag. In 2020, during height of pandemic, I made this big leap, moved my family cross country from New York to California to join Hoag and explore just, you know, creating a digital footprint for the organization. That was the task at hand. Previous to that, I was at American Express for about 15 years, where I spent time in varying parts of the organization, leading digital product, design, and or marketing. My entire career thus far has been in the digital world. Super excited about the journey I'm on to see how that experience can hopefully influence the healthcare sector where it makes sense. But yeah, the complete product focus, design team oriented, building the first design teams at American Express, building some very interesting niche products in the financial services sector, and then also having responsibility at the P&L level for digital marketing portions of my career.
Well, that's super exciting and very diverse background. Appreciate you sharing that. Having been in the industry for quite some time, just curious, what are some of the trends and ideas that excite you the most these days?
Yeah, you know, I'm less of a trend person and definitely more of a what problems can the technology that's currently available help us solve. I see so much opportunity in healthcare where digital solutions could definitely be made, could make things easier or help organizations differentiate. So I'm always paying attention to what's new in the tech world, has value in the problems we're trying to solve, or niche new areas that we know, maybe it's not a problem, but if we brought a product like that to life, it could add real value to the consumer base. So, you know, anywhere from how can AI be activated in disease management? Like, are there ways we could be leveraging artificial intelligence in that, especially as they're, you know, activated to collate and run through tons of data to give you the best findings? How do we bridge the human touch with digital tools to focus on not only like sick care, but helping people stay healthy? How do we leverage tech to give you that more one-to-one personalized experience versus a one-size-fits-all journey? Then you go into like what's buzzing right now, right? You have at-home care, you have IoT and voice assistant technology, companion experiences that are digitized. They're all interesting models and or tools, I would say. But the key, or for me at least, the exciting part for me is finding where it adds value and if any of that could be used in solutioning problems that the consumer base is facing when they think about healthcare, access to healthcare, managing their, like I said, their disease states, and or in a sizable part of the population, staying healthy and lifestyle-based healthcare.
Yeah, that's super exciting. And I'm pretty sure we could probably spend the rest of the podcast talking about some of the, you know, the advancements and the technology and the tools that are being built, especially in healthcare. Having spent a few years myself on, you know, in a healthcare IT, I firsthand know how, number one, how archaic the industry is in general, but also all of the opportunities and advancements that we've seen, and especially in the past couple of years with everything being so amplified. So that's absolutely definitely, you know, relatable on so many levels what you're talking about.
The thing I'd add on that piece of it is, it was interesting because I came into healthcare too thinking, you know, we're definitely behind when you think about consumer centric, you know, digital models, that's for sure. But I think as the systems relate in an IT specific world, healthcare, you know, it's a machine and it's running, and the focus is kind of the right focus when you think about saving lives and having the equipment and the tools and the processes and the tech to do that. So when I think about Hogue and physician care and, or, you know, information tech that we have here, the softwares they use as it relates to giving you medical care, to me, that still continues to be extremely forward-thinking, and there's a lot of progress there. But when you start to talk about technology in the terms of what we hear in the startup world, when you think about where financial services or e-com or any of the other industries that have had to leap forward using technology from a consumer-centric model, definitely behind, and that's where I think the pandemic kind of forced a lot of immediate transformations and then obviously continued investment in that space for the industry.
You make an interesting point, which I want to double click on that a little bit further. When it comes to advanced technologies, you talked about AI, machine learning, a lot of the predictive analytics and things like that in healthcare, which begs a question in terms of just overall organizationally, how do you maybe within your team or at a broader scale within the organization go about building and fostering that culture of innovation, that continuous need for improvement, that experimentation? What are some of the strategies that really help you succeed in that space?
Yeah, you know, as I'm leading this strategy and trying to build a team into the organization, I have a few things that I say to breed or cultivate innovation and transformational thinking. There's a few things, like I would call them principles, that I feel like the team needs, right? One, inspire a culture of intellectual bravery. And what I mean by that is you have to be comfortable that you're hiring really smart people or people that have a skill that's necessary on the team, right? And you have to be willing to have them at the table and allow them to disagree or challenge the status quo. They need to feel, you know, people talk a lot about psychological safety in the workplace, just feeling like you can say, I don't think that's a great idea, or you can say any ideas that you might have. And you can feel good about debating a concept, thoughts, what your opinions are, without feeling that there's a punishment in the corner if you speak up in that way, right? So I guess just that idea of having a team feel like they can bring their intellect to the table, they can have dissent, they can challenge the status quo without any fear of doing so. Obviously, you want everyone to do it in a very professional way and constructive way, but that fear lever needs to be removed. And I think that helps open the table for innovation, because it's through that debate, it's through having diverse perspectives at the table that you're going to really uncover nuggets that you can go explore. The second I would say, you know, encouraging critical thinking and not just superficial conversations, you know, not just saying, hey, I heard about AI out there, we should try it. That's not really innovative, right? You really have to have a team that is asking questions constantly. Are they throwing all the ideas, good and bad, on the wall? Or is everyone only playing in the safe zone? Expect and encourage the failure, right? I think that failure is going to be necessary to innovate. You have to try a bunch of things. They have to fall apart almost for you to know what makes sense and what's going to be right and what's going to actually, you know, hit the market and feel innovative. Because if it's all easy, if as you're building something, if everything's just easy, you're probably not on an innovative path. You're probably on a path that's already been figured out. I would give you two last ones that I kind of steer with. One is I weigh in last. When the conversations are happening with my team, I just find that I will always try to speak last. I let the team go. I let them give their ideas. I let us brainstorm. And the reason for that is not because I think I'm coming in with the smartest idea, absolutely not. But the minute I speak, I feel like it creates some type of, you know, censorship or divide. Like people now want to agree with my thoughts and maybe not share their thought that could have been extremely different and or maybe disagreed with mine. And so I feel like people having that open space and being the ones driving the discussion and my team feeling like they're driving the discussion is always important. And the last I'll leave you with is rewarding EQ, so emotional quotient, as much as we do IQ, right? having the team really get into the customer mindset, their feelings, the emotions, what's going to drive adoption, stickiness. You need people that do have that emotional intelligence at the forefront, and not only just leaning on, hey, I'm smart and I know what I'm doing and I have a skill, but also tapping into that a little bit to get under the psyche a little bit of, what do consumers want? What problems are we trying to solve? Is this really going to stick? So those are a few that I can throw out there that I try to instill and bring into the team as we think about, hey, you're a group that has to continue innovating and thinking of new ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. And one recurring theme through all of the strategies that you had covered is what definitely stands out is your team, the ability to surround yourself with individuals that bring a specific skill set or strength that's missing on your team. So yep. I would love to understand your approach towards hiring and retaining the top talent, especially in this highly competitive market that we all experiencing ourselves. What are some of the practical recommendations that you have, or maybe something that works for you and your teams, or conversely, maybe lessons learned that you've gone through this period as you were building out your group, you're trying to attract the top talent. Talk to us a little bit further from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, they're the common things that, number one, they're different carrots and things that people are looking for, right? They're the common ones that every hiring leader is trying to activate on. It's like salary, the benefits the company is offering. A remote work has been a big discussion point, and just having flexibility in your workday. And then there are the levers that go a bit deeper, right? I think what I found with healthcare, and even if I take a look at myself, what was extremely motivating about taking this leap from an industry that I had kind of grown up in and seen their transition from, you know, what financial services used to be into competing with the fintech world and how we had to evolve that. Now, taking a leap into healthcare, I think one of the big drivers I've seen when I think about, you know, attracting and retaining talent is we've been able to find talent that just really wants to have an ability to impact things at a broader scope. They want more white space. They want to not just own a sliver or, you know, play in a very descriptive sandbox. They want to own a piece of a strategy and or work that they feel can transform, can have larger, more impactful outcomes than maybe, you know, hey, yeah, I could be working at X big technology company, but the reality is, even though I'm at this big technology company with all the benefits and the bells and whistles, the scope and the ability of me using my craft is very limited to what they've defined. With the mission we have here and what we're building here at Hove from a digital perspective, coming and joining the team, you are getting to work on chunks of very meaningful, purpose-driven work that is geared towards transforming and thinking about healthcare differently. So I think that's been, for me at least, with this particular role, that's been a lever that I found is really motivating for candidates that we're talking to, right? And so I would go back, I think for anyone coming into a job, there's the job and the, of course, the salary and the benefits and all of that stuff still extremely matter. But there's another side of it now that I'm seeing come up where people want to work on meaningful things. They want to feel like they are not just being asked to design a button, or you just kind of work on this part of the app and you don't have room to bring your ideas forward. So that for me has been a lever, and also in some cases, a retention strategy, right? They are bought into the purpose, the mission. They really understand where we're headed. They all believe in that transformation. You can self-identify with the industry. We all have people that have experienced healthcare or been sick in some form. And so getting that exposure and ability to work on projects that feel larger and more meaty has been an interesting lever for us.
Yeah, and as I actually just made a note of, as you were talking about the different levers that you like to pull from that perspective, which leads me to a further question. When it comes to the actual interview process, which is a science of its own, a combination of art and a science, I've been on different sides of the equation as a candidate myself, as a hiring manager, as part of a staffing organization. So one common thread that I've been experiencing is that there's too much emphasis on what are the weaknesses that I can tolerate in this particular candidate versus what are the strengths missing on my team, and can that candidate handle, you know, actually fill that void? How do you approach about, you know, your overall just preparation and going through the interview itself and then what happens actually afterwards? Maybe share some examples of things that actually work well for you. Maybe, you know, the questions that you really like to ask. And more importantly, what do you look for in the responses when you hear them?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, preparation before you decide on your candidate or interview people is really important, right? Because let's say I had a, you know, head of product that I'm looking for. Not all head of products are created equal. They, to the point I made earlier, different people based on their training, based on their experience, their work, you know, career trajectory, they're going to come with different thinking models, different skill sets. You as the hiring leader really need to go into that interview with some clear thoughts on, here's the job I have. Here's really what I'm looking for. I need a candidate that has these five things. I need, because these are the five things that are going to be really important in their day-to-day, you know, in their 80% of their job for them to be successful. So instead of saying, hey, I just need, I want to meet anyone that has a product background, I instead try to do some homework that sits down and really maps out, like, okay, I need a head of product, or I need a head of design, or what are the top five things that they have to bring to the table, right, in order to get that job. And so there's preparation in that way, where I'm just really being thoughtful about what does the candidate need to kind of show in that interview process? What are the skills I'm looking for, right? Because maybe I really need somebody that just is going to be an extremely strong leader. You know, they know how to motivate, inspire, activate a team, versus maybe sometimes I need somebody that knows how to roll up their sleeves and actually get back in the details. If those two sides of the fence, I'd be interviewing slightly differently. The questions would be slightly different depending on that, you know, whichever path I'm trying to fill for. So I would say, you know, there's just kind of the thought process of, yeah, let me first figure out what I want and how we want to set that up. And then you get into the interview. And for me, it's more of a conversation, right? And the reason I say it's a conversation, it's probably a tough conversation, but I don't like the forced, rehearsed environment that sometimes interviews can drive people to, right? So I'm looking for people who feel like they are comfortable in their skin, that they're able to sit there and have a normal conversation about their strengths, their areas they want to learn, improve, grow, how they think about leadership, how they think about product, how they think about design, customers. I want to hear their thoughts, less so trying to drill them with my thoughts, right? Because sometimes the interview turns into that hiring person's projecting onto someone else. And the way I'm going to uncover if this person can actually sit in the room, be a right hand or a left hand, whichever way it goes, is through that conversation. So I'm looking at probing on critical thinking, like we talked about earlier, their intellectual bravery, right? With some situational questions, their ideas and ability to influence. You know, some of my questions will dive into details of like your strategic abilities, the digital acumen, and then of course, leadership definitely tops the list as well, and leadership questions.
Do you perhaps have some examples of the actual questions that you like to ask as to be able to uncover some of those abilities? Or maybe you mentioned situational or hypothetical examples that you ask the candidates provide. Just curious to get a little bit of a more detailed glimpse into that process and into that conversation.
Yeah, you know, I'll probe like into questions that obviously go into, hey, you're just, you know, let's do a situational example or a question here around you. I give you this money, right? Let's say I give you some funding. Give me some thoughts about what does your strategy look like, mm-hmm. right? I've given you this money. I've given you this problem space. Tell me how you go about building a strategy to that. You have X dollars. Here's the problem we're trying to solve. Walk me through how you're going to set up and move forward to develop a strategy against the problem. So it could be broad. One of the other questions I do like to ask is around their, you know, 2 years from now, we're sitting here, you get this job, we're at a coffee shop doing your update, and you're telling me how things are going. What did you achieve? It's been 2 years. Talk me through that. And then, you know, some of them might go a bit more specific into leadership. Like, what do you reward your team for? Like, what are the things that you will look in your team and say, these are the right models that they're exhibiting, the right principles, right guidelines that they're bringing forward, the right work culture that they're, and ethics that they're kind of emulating. What do you reward and what don't you reward? Like, what are the things? Talk me through that. Those are a couple examples off the top of my head.
Those are great. Yeah, and it's, you know, the theme of this that I'm picking up, which I love, is creating more of a conversation environment versus you just the one-way street where you're just asking questions and the candidate responds, where in reality, it's more effective to be able to create that dialogue and also provide them with an opportunity to ask you questions and make their own assessments, whether you're the type of leader that under whom they can actually succeed, or is this the type of environment that will, you know, put me towards the goals that I'm trying to achieve. So that all of the stuff that you're talking about makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
To take that a little bit further, one other complicated space that's, you know, is a huge challenge, and I'm yet to see anybody succeed in that, is when it comes to interviewing and hiring remotely or hybrid teams where partially you're co-located and the other half of the team is virtually. When it comes to candidate onboarding through that process, through that environment, it's very complicated to be able to create that almost welcome, that initial experience through the first few days. I think those are the most critical. How do you go about that? What are your thoughts on succeeding in that space to be able to onboard candidates, especially if you're operating virtually?
Yeah. So, you know, I've worked in environments where we've operated fully virtually for a few days, hybrid models in past. And then healthcare, obviously, as we're building this new team, one of the tricky parts was you can't necessarily build a team from the ground up and have everyone be completely virtual. So we've gotten the benefit of having a lot of people still on the ground, which is awesome, to be quite frank. But just in general, from an onboarding perspective, right, whether it's a remote situation for a candidate and or in a full-time in-person situation for a candidate, I think onboarding still is really critical and needs to be executed flawlessly to make sure that that person's coming into your team and feeling like, hey, everything we talked about in that interview process, when you and I agreed that this is the right next step for me, right? Because it's a two-way conversation. It's not just me deciding. To me, the candidate has an important job. Is this the right next thing for you to be doing as well? And so onboarding in general, whether it be in person or whether you're in a remote situation, just, you know, across the, to me, work spectrum or types of work spectrum, is important. And I think the couple of things that I will put in there that I would say are a must have as we think about our onboarding. One is just making sure that there's just clear direction of how that first day is going to go. First day, first week. I like to have our team, you know, my leader, the leaders, make sure if I'm planning it or they're hiring, really plan out for that person. What are the expectations the first day, the first week? And then during their first week onboarding, really work with them to give them as much exposure to the organization as we possibly can, right? Culture for Hogue is a really important lever. And I now being in healthcare, I understand why. Because when you're on the ground and you're seeing what matters to people, when you hear the stories from patients where the organization, as a healthcare institution, saved their life or really helped them in a really critical moment on their health journey. Those stories are like, you know, they get me every time. Like I'm not gonna lie. I definitely, all my emotional buttons get pushed at that point. For my team, it's important for them to see that and hear those stories too, because we're not just building digital products because we think they're cool. We're building it because, like I said, there's a problem space. We wanna help. We wanna find ways that we can bring care to this community in a more accessible, convenient manner. And so for me, giving the team access and exposure to the culture of Hogue is really important. So step A, just giving clear expectations on week day one, week zero, week two, week three, et cetera. How is it going to go? What are the things you're going to learn? What are the things I expect of you to do? And teaching them about the org a little bit. Culture, what does it feel like? What does it look like? Who are my partners? Who are people that I'm going to work with? In healthcare, it's very different for digital teams. You're working with physicians, you're working with patients, you're working with people who are healthy, you're working with different operations than if you think about a, you know, staid like technology company where everyone is in the tech space. This is a bit different. And then I think the third is around working with them to set up what that first couple months is going to look like. What does success look like for your role and guiding them through that? So there's the kind of the work, right? Then there's just the tools that you're going to be using, right? When you're coming into a product job or a design job, there's certain tools we have on the team, certain technology stacks that we're working with, being very thoughtful about laying that out and saying, here are all the access you're going to need. Here's all the systems you're going to get set up on. Getting them as tech ready on day one as possible to make a smooth start. I've learned the easy way, hard way, that's important to them. They hate coming into a new role and feeling like we don't know what we're doing, or, hey, I don't have access to anything yet. You know, that I find that the candidates that have a really good starting point, they come in and it's almost like you were prepared for their day one. And so I think that's what I would lean on right now as what we try to think through as we're bringing a new hire, onboarding a new hire into the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are exceptional points. And I think it's super important that, you know, to really design a process around those very first initial stages of onboarding. It's super critical for success and setting them up from the very beginning. So thank you for sharing that. Moving on to just a little bit more on with a focus on you as an individual, you as a leader, you as a person. Share your content diets. What do you consume on a daily basis in terms of the resources? I'm always fascinated with the strategies to keep your mind, you know, selective with so much information overload out there. What are some of the sources you consume, or how selective are you from that perspective?
You know, I'm a reader, so, and I consume a lot of content. And the reason I like to read a lot more than watch things, but I do watch a lot of interesting content as well. And the reason is because what you find is as you go through your career, you have to keep evolving. And for me, learning is evolution. Right. So if I keep learning, I can keep thinking about what's needed now at this stage in my career. What skills am I still lacking? And there's always room for improvement, no matter where you are on your career trajectory. There's always room for improvement. So I just read and watch a variety of things, from TechCrunch, TED Talks, bloggers, Harvard Business Reviews. You know, as I've gotten into healthcare, I like to read a lot of things on Hims or Becker's will come up quite a bit. Then you can't ignore social media. There's books that I get recommended and I read as well. So there's a slew. I apologize. I can't pick a favorite because
that's good.
Different ones have served different needs for me. Right. And so, you know, I'll call out one that I think is interesting. There's like learning from like traditional sources like that. But I find that at this stage in my career, I've learned from the people that I'm working with and my team, to be honest. Mm-hmm. One of my hiring principles is hire people smarter than you always, people that know more in certain mediums and skill sets and spectrums, right? You don't always need to be the smartest in the room. Mm-hmm. And having your team really shine and hiring people that can shine allows you to learn as well as a leader and continue, you know, in a more real life scenario situation, right? So I'm learning through that lens as well. But you know, a couple of my favorite TED Talks, I'll call out two. One is called How Great Leaders Inspire Action. I believe that's the right title. It's by Simon Sinek. Mm-hmm. And it's around, he talks about inspirational leaders and why they're so different and what makes them different and what gets them into that zone of being an inspirational leader. And the whole concept is all of those people, when you're ready, you go from, you know, who's running Apple all the way to like, you know, a Martin Luther King Jr. Example here, they start with, you know, they're very big on starting with why. And when they talk to people and they're conversating and they're trying to learn, they're asking the why questions. They're asking, you know, the how things are done, why it's being done. And they're very much learning. They're not just asking that to then jump to tell you what they think. They're really sitting there and listening. And so that's actually one of my favorites that I've looked at. And if you have a chance, you could check it out. Mm-hmm. And then another one is why we have too few women leaders. And that one is by Sheryl Sandberg. And she just talks about, you know, being a woman myself and thinking about, I'm a mom of two now, and juggling that side of the spectrum, wanting to be an awesome mommy to my two, and also loving my career and wanting to excel there. You find, you know, it can be challenging at times, and you really have to figure out how to do it all in some moments. Maybe not all well, but you still have to figure out how to do it all. And sometimes one's taking over versus the other, yeah, and balancing that out. And so that particular talk, she talks about why there's so few women in the C-suite. Mm-hmm. And one of the findings in that is around, you know, a lot of women end up having to make that tough decision. I have to give up one for the other because I want to be great at both, but I'm having such a hard time. So they end up leaving the workforce. And what the whole talk is around is to get to that, for us to have more women in those positions, we need to figure out ways as leaders that we're giving them the ways to stay in the workforce, mm-hmm, so they can continue to excel and move forward, right? But it might create, you might as a leader need to think about some adjustments of what you do to allow that growth. Yeah. And so those are two of my like favorite ones, I would say that I've... Yeah.
Well, you couldn't have set me up any better for the last question that I have. You mentioned books. Share with us, what are you currently reading? And perhaps what is one book that you always recommend to others and why is that?
You know, this is going to be fun. It's not a workbook. So it's not a workbook that I'm reading right now.
Yeah.
But hopefully no judgment here. But I'm actually was recently reading Think Like a Monk by Jay Shetty. And I wanted something light and just purposeful, like something a little bit different. Sometimes when you're in work all the time, you need to have your brain divert some of its energy into something else. And the books around, you know, he talks about things he learned as a monk about just living and life. And he takes that advice and he turns it into some practical steps like that anyone could basically just take. So you could start really living in the present. Many times, you know, what he talks about, many times people are constantly thinking about, oh, I should have, could have, would have passed, right? Why did I do that? Or you're planning so heavily for the future. And we forget that really today is right now. And you really have to come bring your best self into today and figure out what you can do with the time you have in the, what's facing you, like right this moment in your present state, right? And so, you know, he spent some time talking about how you redefine success, just reminding you what you should really, what's really important to some extent for you and what things you might have forgotten that actually bring you joy that you just kind of forget or push to the side in some cases. So it's not a full workbook, but it is it's a definitely light, but really thoughtful book. I actually really like it.
No, that's super cool. And we appreciate definitely that recommendation. And for our listeners, we'll make the title and links to, you know, in the show notes. Kathy Kim, thank you enough for your time today. It was a very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. I love what I love doing with all the guests on the podcast is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see if everything we've discussed still makes sense and still applies. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. And I look forward to talking to you in a year again.
Great. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Have a nice day.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.